Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Travis the Chimpanzee. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. We like to believe that we can bridge the gap between the wild and the domestic. We invite the primal into our living rooms, dress it in our clothes, and teach it to eat at our tables. But there is a thin, fragile line between a companion and a captive. And when that line snaps, the consequences are visceral. In 1995, a baby chimpanzee named Travis was brought to a quiet home in Stamford, Connecticut. For years, he wasn't just a pet. He was a local celebrity. He signed for his own snacks, drank wine from stemmed glasses, and slept at the foot of the bed. He was the picture of a human soul trapped in a powerful non-human frame. He was treated like a family member, like a baby even. But beneath the birthday parties and the polo shirts, a different clock was ticking. In 2009, the veneer of civilization didn't just crack. It vanished in a blur of violence that changed lives forever and left us questioning the true cost of taming the untamable. Tonight I'm going to peel back the layers of a tragedy that was years in the making, that many should have seen coming, yet no one did. A creeping darkness on the horizon. A ticking time bomb, if you will. This is the story of Travis, a chimpanzee who lived as a man until the day the wild finally reclaimed him. On Monday, February the 16th, 2009, 55-year-old Charla Nash's life would change forever. It started with a phone call from her longtime friend Sandra Herold and ended with a frantic call to 911. You see, Charla had just been the victim of a gruesome, life-altering attack. And the perpetrator, a 14-year-old, 240-pound chimpanzee named Travis. The news of what happened to Charla and Travis sent shockwaves across the globe, from the United States to Europe, from the UK to Canada, and further afield, with the biggest question on everyone's mind being, what had caused Travis to do this? And this question wouldn't get a clear or straightforward answer. But let's not get ahead of ourselves just yet. As always, let's start at the very beginning. It is estimated that there are over 700 chimpanzees being kept as pets in the United States. Most other Western countries heavily restrict exotic animals being kept as domestic pets, and they have done so for decades. The United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, Germany, Denmark, Norway, France, Italy, they all have restrictions on wild animals being kept by private citizens. In fact, there are 20 states in the United States that also ban this practice. Back in 2009, a chimpanzee in Stamford, Connecticut named Travis was part of that 700. Travis was born on October the 21st, 1995, in what's now called the Missouri Chimpanzee Sanctuary, known previously as the Missouri Primate Foundation. His father, Coco, had been imported as a wild animal to the United States from Africa in the 1970s. His mother was an 11-year-old retired zoo chimpanzee named Susie. 3 days after Travis's birth on October the 24th, 1995, a couple from Connecticut named Sandra and Jerome Herold purchased Travis for $40,000 from a woman named Connie Braun Casey. She was an exotic animal dealer who specialized in chimpanzees and was based in Festus, Missouri. The Heralds took Travis back to their home in Rock Rimmon Road in High Ridge, Stamford. I think it's important to note that there are discrepancies with Travis's birth date. Most news outlets list his birthday as being in October of 1995, while some documents list June of 1994. The October date is correct, however. The discrepancy came from the invoice of purchase from Casey's sale, which is viewable online. Casey wrote the incorrect date of birth on that receipt. Anyway, while everyone wondered why Sandra had wanted a chimpanzee in the first place, it soon became clear just how special Travis was to her. Sandra raised Travis like he was a human child. He became a constant companion. I guess you could view Travis as being a baby substitute for Sandra. She put nappies on him, fed him formula from a bottle, and dressed him in baby clothes. Sandra's fascination with chimpanzees began as far back as the 1970s, when, for a time, Sandra, her husband Jerry, and their daughter Susan traveled state to state barrel racing their horses in rodeos. This is also how they'd come to meet close family friend Charla Nash. It was during one rodeo that Sandra saw a chimpanzee dressed as a cowboy riding a horse around the ring. It was the cutest thing she'd ever seen. But Sandra didn't go out and buy a chimpanzee right away. It wasn't until her daughter moved away to college and her parents became ill and passed away that Sandra realized that she was missing something in her life. Sandra was around 56 years of age by this point, so she knew that growing her family naturally wasn't an option. And that's where Travis entered the picture. When Travis first arrived at the Herald home, he slept in a baby's crib in Sandra and Jerry's bedroom. But it wasn't long until he was sleeping in their bed with them. They documented Travis's milestones, much like a parent would for their own child. So, for example, at around 3 months, Travis turned over, signifying a major motor skill milestone. By 6 months, Travis was walking. They measured his growth against the kitchen wall and so on. The couple took baths with Travis and even taught him how to brush his own teeth. They demonstrated, perhaps, the most extreme form of anthropomorphism ever demonstrated toward a chimpanzee in captivity. There was no question about it. Travis was more to them than a family pet. He was unquestionably a family member. Exotic animals suffer physically and psychologically when held in captivity. Even the largest, most enriched environments can't replicate their native habitats, and scientists have amassed a wealth of data to show the negative impact that captivity has on the psyche and behaviors of freedom-restricted wild animals. This is why many zoos, safari parks, and circuses and now distancing themselves from the practice of keeping animals locked up unnaturally. Sandra would later tell reporters, quote,
"Travis couldn't be any more my son, even if I gave birth to him myself."
5 years after purchasing Travis in 2000, the Heralds sadly lost their only child, Susan, who was killed when the car she was driving veered off the road and hit a tree head-on. From that point onward, Travis became Sandra and Jerry's entire world. The couple also expanded and modified their home to better suit their beloved chimpanzee. As the years went by, it was clear that Travis was living a life far different from how other chimpanzees naturally lived, both in the wild and in captivity. Instead of foraging for food and climbing trees, Travis was watching television, using a toilet like a human, and eating ice cream and fast food. Side note, fast food has a detrimental impact on human psychology and physical health if eaten regularly. The effect it has on a chimpanzee, however, is anyone's guess. You see, Sandra and Jerry Herald had no formal training, education, or knowledge in chimpanzees, or any other primate for that matter. They didn't know how to look after Travis, nor what was best for the animal. Their decision to purchase him was purely because Sandra was lonely, and their process for raising him was entirely based on their understanding of raising a human baby. But when there are no laws or regulations in place to prevent situations like these, then they're entirely legal and will occur because ignorance, as they say, is bliss. Well, until it's not. Meanwhile, Travis also learned how to use a home computer, warm up his own food in a microwave, and even learned the basics of driving a car. Travis always appeared happy and full of life. He was doted on by his adopted parents, and essentially wanted for nothing, if he was a human baby, that is. But it was evident just how intelligent Travis was, and he developed a real character. He enjoyed driving the family's lawnmower and going out for rides in the car with Jerry. Sandra and Jerry even took him to work with them every day as a sort of mascot. They owned a towing company, and Travis posed for photos with customers at their shop and rode in the tow truck with Jerry when he went out on jobs. Their company made them multi-millionaires. He knew to buckle his seat when he got in the truck and liked to wear a baseball shirt and hat while, quote-unquote, working. Travis was charming and friendly to everyone who entered their shop, and customers generally loved him and were happy to interact with him due to his warm and gentle nature. Travis even became somewhat of a local celebrity. And it wasn't long before he appeared on television shows and in commercials. Everything from Pepsi and Old Navy adverts to the Maury Povich show. It really seemed that the world couldn't get enough of Travis. No one questioned his lifestyle or how his owners treated him like a human. Even the neighbors adored him, and one stated that they enjoyed wrestling with Travis in the family's garden. After all, everyone trusted him. The chimp seemed to know how to limit his strength with the humans, and he didn't show any signs of violence or anger. That is until he was 8 years old. During an incident in October of 2003, Sandra and Jerry were reminded of just how much chaos a chimpanzee could actually cause. The incident happened when Sandra and Travis were in the car and held up in traffic at a busy junction. A pedestrian threw an empty soda can at the Herald's car while it was stopped at a traffic light. The can went through the partially open window and hit Travis. Travis was immediately startled. He unbuckled his seatbelt, opened the door, and chased the man who threw the can down. Luckily, the man managed to escape from Travis, but what ensued was hours of trying to detain the agitated chimpanzee. When police arrived, they lured Travis back into the car several times, only for him to let himself out of the other door and then chase the police officers around the car and street. The scene would have appeared somewhat comedic if the animal wasn't so dangerous. And whilst nobody got hurt during this situation, it was something that the state of Connecticut took very seriously. It wasn't something that officials wanted to deal with again. They felt that they got lucky, but if it did happen again, someone might get hurt or worse. The incident led the Connecticut General Assembly to implement a law in 2009 which banned citizens from owning a primate which weighed in excess of 50 pounds, or 23 kilograms. All owners of exotic pets also had to apply for a state permit, so the owners could be assessed for their suitability to look after such animals. The Department of Environmental Protection stated, however, that the new law did not apply to Sandra and Jerry because they had owned Travis since prior to the law's implementation. The DEP also stated that they felt Travis did not pose a risk to public safety. How contradictory. In fact, everyone at the Stamford Police Station and the DEP adored Travis. And several of the officers wrote in their reports after the 2003 incident that the chimp's attitude was merely playful. And whilst police officers made light of the situation, animal control officers were definitely uneasy about it. They feared that the incident could be the start of worsening behavior from Travis, especially as he was now reaching sexual maturity. They went as far as contacting Sandra with their concerns. They told Sandra that Travis was now a sexually mature adult chimpanzee, and they were known in the wild to copulate as many as 50 times a day. When chimps reach sexual maturity, they tend to want to dominate and take charge. They have the strength equal to that of around 5 grown men. Adult chimpanzees are also known to be unpredictable and violent, which is why we typically only saw adolescent chimpanzee actors in the entertainment industry in the past. Animal Control felt that Sandra and Jerry, in keeping Travis for the duration of his life, which could be anything up to around another 50 years, wasn't plausible. Sandra and Jerry were both in their late 60s, and their ability to look after an adult chimpanzee, who would almost certainly outlive them, was called into question. But Sandra ignored the concerns of Animal Control and insisted that she could look after Travis. But after the soda can incident, the Heralds stopped taking Travis out in public. In 2004, things once again took a turn for the Herald family. In March, Jerry began complaining about stomach pain. The pain was so intense that one day at work, he asked one of his employees to take him to the hospital. This is when Jerry learned that he had stomach cancer, and it was spreading rapidly. Unfortunately, the cancer was terminal, and there was nothing doctors could do to slow the spread. Jerry passed away a month later, on April 12th, but not before voicing concerns to Sandra, who was by then 67 years old. Jerry's concerns were around Sandra's ability to take care of Travis on her own. He asked her to consider sending the chimp to a sanctuary, telling her that it would be best for both of them. The sudden loss of her husband not only sent Sandra into severe depression, but it seemed to deeply affect Travis too. He would rock back and forth for hours and would take pictures of Jerry off the wall, kissing and hugging them to his chest. Sandra would later write, quote,
"We are both lost without him and miss him dearly. Travis still waits for him, especially at supper time. At that time, Jerry and Travis used to have a glass of wine with their evening meal, and I miss seeing that so, so much."
The idea of sending Travis to a sanctuary loomed in Sandra's mind. But how could she? The two were mourning Jerry together, and Travis was all that she had. But more than that, Travis had been fully domesticated. He only knew life as a human child. Living in a habitat with other primates would be completely alien to him. Around this time, Sandra would often cry, and Travis felt her pain. When she cried, Travis lovingly brushed her hair and even filed her nails with a nail file for her. Nearly a year after Jerry's passing, Sandra sat down and wrote a letter to a friend in Florida who ran a chimpanzee sanctuary. The letter told her that she was worried about what would happen to Travis if she were to die. She wanted him to have the best life possible and to be around other chimps. Sandra set up a trust fund for Travis and arranged with her friend to come to Florida to see her sanctuary. Included in her letter were photos of Travis and a check for $250, but she never mailed it. With Jerry gone, yes, Sandra found it difficult to deal with Travis on her own. The chimp, who was now weighing more than 240 pounds, was considered morbidly obese by regular standards, and his strength had long surpassed Sandra's. But Sandra couldn't bear to lose Travis. She couldn't bear to lose her last family member. In early 2008, she began construction on a large new addition to the house that Jerry had designed for Travis years prior. At this point, Travis spent his days watching television, playing on the computer, painting, and snacking on junk food. This only contributed further to Travis's increasing weight gain. On February the 16th, 2009, Sandra gave Travis a cup of tea that had Xanax in it. She hoped that it would help regulate his growing unstable mood, but it didn't seem to have any effect. Sandra didn't consider that perhaps giving human mind-altering medication to another species might not have the same desired effect. Just a few minutes later, Travis took Sandra's car keys and escaped the house. Not knowing what else to do, Sandra called her close friend Charla to come over and help with the situation. Charla had known Travis since he was a baby, and she was a frequent visitor to the home, as she and Sandra had been friends for many years, although they eventually drifted apart. Shortly after Jerry's death, however, they reconnected, and it couldn't have come at a better time. Sandra was lonely and in need of friendship, while Charla and her then 12-year-old daughter were struggling financially and needing a place to stay. Sandra gave Charla a job working as a dispatcher and bookkeeper for her towing company, and she let the two stay in a loft that belonged to Sandra's late daughter, rent-free. Charla also took care of Sandra's lawn and looked in on Travis from time to time. The arrangement seemed to work out great for everyone. The weekend before, Sandra and Charla went to the Mohegan Sun Casino in Monteville. The two friends rarely went out together like this, but it was a trip that they were both looking forward to. A girls' weekend. Before they left, they got their hair done professionally and then spent the weekend at the casino gambling and dining out. When they returned on Monday, February the 16th, Sandra came home to an agitated chimp. Travis didn't want to do any of the things that he normally loved. He wasn't interested in watching television, painting, or eating any of his favorite junk food. After preparing a meal of fish and chips for Travis at lunchtime, Sandra put a Xanax in his usual cup of afternoon tea. Perhaps this was a mistake. Not so long following this, and while Sandra was cleaning Travis's bedroom, the chimp took the house keys from the kitchen counter and let himself outside. From there, he began running from car to car, trying to get inside each one, banging on the windows, wanting to go for a ride. When Sandra failed to get Travis back into the house on her own, this is when she called Charla and asked her to come over and help her with Travis. Charla arrived at around 3:40 p.m. Charla adored Travis and knew him well, treating him like one of Sandra's family members. In an attempt to lure Travis back into the house, Charla held out his favorite toy, a red Tickle Me Elmo doll. This, however, didn't exactly go to plan. Travis ran aggressively towards Charla before getting on his hind legs and launching a gruesome and savage attack upon her. The chimpanzee knocked Charla onto the side of her car and pounced on her, clawing at her head, face and arms. Travis screamed loudly and teared at anything he could get a grip on. Now, remember that Travis is 240 pounds in weight. That's around 17 stone. He was also, when he stood on his hind legs, around 5'5" or 1.7 meters in height. For context, I'm around 5'11", so a little bit taller than Travis, but I'm around 5 stone or 70 pounds lighter than Travis, and I'm a fully grown man with average build. Now imagine someone about my size, although significantly heavier and 5 times more powerful than me, jumping on you, clawing at you, pounding down with huge strong arms, ripping and tearing bluntly at your flesh. This is what Charla experienced. Horrified and desperate to save her friend, Sandra hit Travis over the head with a shovel, but it had little effect on him. Not knowing what else to do, Sandra ran into the house and grabbed a kitchen knife. Sandra ran back out and stabbed Travis 3 times in the back. He simply looked at her. Sandra later said when interviewed, quote,
"For me to do something like that, to put a knife in him, it was like putting a knife in myself."
Sandra didn't know what else to do, so she ran in fear and locked herself in a nearby car, and called 911, frantically telling operators that a chimpanzee had attacked and killed her friend. This is that 911 call.
Stand for 911, where's your emergency?
This is Sandy, 21 Rock Crimson Road.
What's the problem?
Send the police!
What's the problem there?
The chimp killed my friend!
What's the problem with your friend?
Oh, please!
What's the problem with your friend? I need to know.
Send the police up! With a gun! Hurry up!
Who has a gun?
Please, hurry up! He's killing my girlfriend!
What is the problem?
He's killing my friend!
Who's killing your friend?
My chimpanzee!
Oh, your chimpanzee is killing your friend.
Yes. He ripped her apart! Hurry up!
With a gun.
Hurry up, please!
There's someone on the way.
With guns, please! You shoot him!
What is the monkey doing? Tell me what the monkey's...
He ripped her face off!
He ripped her face off?
He tried to attack me! Please,
okay,
hurry.
I need you to calm down a little bit. They're on the way. Can you put yourself away? I don't want the monkey attacking you.
Please, hurry up. Listen to me.
They're on the way, ma'am.
They got to shoot him. Please. Please, hurry.
You're there with your friend. I need you to help your friend. Can you go help your friend?
I can't. He tried to attack me now.
Is he still there with your friend?
Yes.
Okay, so then back off. Then don't get any closer, please. Okay? They're already on the way.
Please.
If the monkey moves away from your friend, let me know, okay? So we can try to help your friend.
No, I can't. She's dead. She's dead.
Why are you saying that she's dead?
She's dead. He ripped her apart.
He ripped what apart? Her face?
Everything.
He ripped her apart?
Listen, I think I'm going to sleep. I think I'm going to pass
out. No, just breathe, okay? I'm going to stay with you on the phone until they get there.
Listen to me. Please hurry. Please hurry. Oh, my God. They got to have their guns out. They got to have their guns out. Listen to me. Oh, my God.
Is this your monkey or whose monkey is it? It's your monkey.
No, it's mine.
How do you know how big is he? How many pounds?
200 pounds.
400?
200.
200 pounds?
Listen to me, please. Where are they?
And he's a chimp, correct?
Yes. Where are they?
They're going your way. They're going as fast as they can your way, okay?
Please. Please go faster. Please, Derek.
Is the monkey still by your friend, or can you get close to your friend?
He's eating her. He's eating her. Please. God, please.
Okay, I need you to calm down for me. I know it's hard, okay? I know it's hard. But they're going as fast as they can your way, okay?
Oh, my God. Please, hurry. They tell them they got to shoot him because I tried stabbing him, and he's not... And it made him worse.
Okay, Sandra.
Have them shoot him.
They will. Sandra, I already have the fire department close by, okay? So as soon as the police gets there, the fire department is going to move in, okay? The fire department can't move in yet, but as soon as the police officers show up...
Please tell them. Shoot him because he's going to try to attack me now.
Just breathe, Sandra.
Shoot him! Shoot him!
Sandra, stay in your car.
Shoot him!
Sandra, I need you to stay in your car.
Shoot him, please. I tried stabbing him, and he's hurt now, too. So he's going to attack anybody. I can't get out of this car.
Lock your doors on your car and stay there with me.
It don't matter. He will rip the doors wide open.
Sandra, just do what I'm telling you to. Stay in the car. The police officers will handle it.
Please tell him to shoot him. Please tell him, please.
They did, Sandra. They're shooting at him already, okay?
But he's not dead.
I know. They will continue until he's dead, okay? I just need you to stay on the phone with me and breathe.
He's not dead. Oh, God.
When police officers arrived at the scene, Travis was looming over a still Charla and eating her face, tearing away jagged chunks of flesh. Then, after seeing the police arrive, he began roaming the garden in an agitated and fiery rage. He then charged towards the police car, encircling it. He tried opening the passenger side door, but it was locked. He then made his way to the driver's side door and opened it. Feeling threatened, Officer Frank Cifari was left with no choice but to open fire on Travis. Despite being shot four times at close range, Travis wasn't immediately immobilized. He still had enough adrenaline running through him to run back inside the house. But upon Travis entering his bedroom, he collapsed and died. Charla's situation was so dire that officers initially assumed that she was dead. But that was until she reached out and grabbed for an officer's leg. Charla had lost virtually her entire face. Travis had torn off her eyelids, nose, and her lips. The chimp had also gouged out both of her eyes, chewed off her left hand, and nearly tore off her entire right arm. Charla lay in a bloody and gory mess of blood and torn flesh. Police officers couldn't recognize any human characteristics on her. Investigators estimated that the attack on Charla lasted an agonizing 12 minutes. In the days following the attack, Charla underwent over 188 hours of extensive and reconstructive surgery, and eventually a full face transplant. Travis had broken nearly all of the bones in her face, dislocated her jaw completely, torn off her scalp, and left her completely blind and suffering with brain damage. Charla's injuries were so severe that the hospital she was treated at offered counseling sessions to the staff members who had initially treated her. 3 days after the attack, and once Charla was stabilized, she was flown to the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio for her experimental face transplant, undergoing 15 months of medical intervention. Given the extensive care she required and experimental nature of the procedures, in the extremely expensive climate of the American healthcare system, the cost of her care would have cost in the seven figures. But luckily for Charla, the Pentagon offered to pay her entire medical bill in exchange for her medical records, so they could use the information to treat badly disfigured soldiers after combat. Nobody knows why Travis did what he did, why he snapped and attacked, why he became so brutally violent after years of a calm and happy demeanor. Some have speculated that perhaps he didn't recognize Charla, as she had recently changed her hairstyle. Though he had begun to lash out even prior to her arriving at the scene. The idea of a stranger at his home holding his favorite toy could have caused the chimp to become frightened, confused, and territorial. Others have pointed to the Xanax that Sandra had given him shortly before the attack, believing that it could have caused hallucinations or other adverse psychological effects which added to his aggression. Further observers have also postulated that they believe that Travis was simply a wild animal who was living an unnatural lifestyle, consuming foods not suitable for animals, and experiencing life in an alien manner, and thus he eventually snapped. Maybe it was as simple as Travis being upset about Sandra leaving for the weekend. After all, this was out of character for her, and she normally gave Travis her full time and attention. Jealousy can be a strong and nasty emotion after all. Remember, she had just returned home from her casino trip, and she had plans to meet up with a friend later that day too. I know those of you who have pets can attest to the fact that pets know when we're planning on leaving, and how they do indeed get annoyed and jealous of us for leaving them, much like humans. Following the attack, Travis's head was taken to a Connecticut State laboratory to be examined and tested for rabies as part of an investigation into the attack. And while Travis was found to be free of any diseases, he was on preventative medication for Lyme disease, plus the unprescribed human Xanax. On February 25th, 9 days after the attack took place, Travis's remains were cremated at a pet cemetery in Stamford. And as for Charla, the attack happened in February, and by November of the same year, she was well enough to appear on the Oprah Winfrey Show to talk about what she had been through. She said at the time, quote,
"Well, thank you for consenting to do this interview with me. Tell me why you wanted to do the interview now."
Well, I'm getting stronger and healthier. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to put across the people's minds that these exotic animals are very dangerous. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't be around. Mm-hmm. There's a place for them that it's not in residential areas, that's for sure.
Tell me, can you take me back to the date of February 16th? What do you remember of that day?
I don't remember anything. And they told the doctor that I don't want to remember because I could imagine what it was like.
Every day, Charla wore a protective hat over her head due to the large portion of her scalp that was missing. Doctors rebuilt her tongue, which had been torn out during the attack, and they were able to create a small hole in her lower face to allow her to eat and drink small amounts through a straw. Charla lived at the hospital for almost a year, where she was being treated. She hid away from the general public, with a security guard assigned to her room to stop people, and more importantly the press, from entering her room. Charla was extremely nervous that the public would see her face and be terrified at the sight. But despite all of the challenges that she faced, Charla remained positive about her recovery, choosing to focus on how the surgeries and work that was being done on her could help others with facial disfigurements in the future. A month after the attack, Charla's family filed a $50 million lawsuit against Sandra. But Sandra died from a ruptured aortic aneurysm at the age of 72, just 14 months later. In November of 2012, Charla settled her lawsuit with Sandra's estate and received nearly $4 million. The attack on Charla sent shockwaves rippling across the United States. It sparked debates over whether exotic animals should be kept as pets and treated as humans. In 2009, the Captive Primate Safety Act, which would have prohibited monkeys, apes, and lemurs from being sold as pets, was introduced, but failed to pass the US Senate. Shortly after the attack, two former residents of Stanford would come forward, sharing stories about their encounters with Travis. A woman named Leslie Mostel-Paul claimed that in 1996, when Travis was a year old, that he had bitten her hand. She had seen the chimp sitting in a car with Sandra outside St. Joseph's Medical Center when curiosity got the better of her, and she walked over to the Herald's car to get a closer look. She asked if she could shake the chimp's hand. That's when, she said, Travis pulled her hand into the car and bit her. The woman claimed she went to the Stanford Police and the Connecticut State Police to report the incident. But Leslie says her complaint wasn't handled properly, nor followed up.
I asked her if I could say hello to thee. I thought he was a monkey at the time. She said absolutely. So I started reaching to shake his hand, and he grabbed it when it got to the side view mirror on her side and started pulling me towards, you know, inside the car. And then I'm pulling back and he bit down on my hand.
Leslie was not seriously injured, although the bite did break her skin. Following this, another man came forward with information where he stated that in 1998, Travis had bitten his thumb after he attempted to pick up a toy that the chimp had dropped. Both of these individuals came out of the woodwork after the death of Travis, whereas the general impression of the chimpanzee for years while he was alive was overwhelmingly positive in the town. Although it does make you wonder what other incidents occurred in the Herald home. Following Sandra's passing, she was buried with two urns beside her. One was her daughter's ashes, and the other belonged to Travis. It's been years since Charla has publicly spoken out about the attack, choosing to instead focus on her recovery and gaining her independence back. As of 2022, Charla was living in Boston, Massachusetts, to be closer to Brigham Women's Hospital, where she was receiving ongoing experimental treatment. Tonight's episode is a story of a tragedy in the true sense of the word, an event causing great suffering, destruction, and distress to everyone involved. Both Charla and Travis were victims of this situation. Travis was the product of two chimpanzees who were being kept as pets. He never had a choice in the matter. Nothing about his life was normal. He was improperly cared for and fed an unsuitable diet. Travis was drinking alcohol, eating junk food, being confined in a home not suitably kitted out for exotic animals, and being administered unprescribed human medication. And while Sandra viewed all of these acts as being delivered out of love, it clearly wasn't in the best interest of the chimpanzee. I've always found this incident to be quite haunting. It leaves you with a hollow feeling inside. I've been following it since it happened back in 2009. Had you heard about Travis the chimp before tonight's episode? Perhaps the story rings a bell to you, but you aren't sure where from. Well, a scene based loosely on these events featured in the opening of the 2022 Jordan Peele movie titled Nope. So maybe from that. Either way, it's an interesting and somewhat disturbing tale of human hubris, where once again, our assumption that we can control nature and wild animals catches us short, and nature very gently reminds us that like all other animals and aspects of the natural world, we are merely a cog in the machine. And should we ever fly too close to the sun, then be sure our wax wings will melt. Good night, everyone.